Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Because it's just like, it just never ends.
Welcome to Sincast, presented by CinemaSins.
All right, everybody, welcome to the Sincast. This is Chris Atkinson from CinemaSins, joined as always by the voice of CinemaSins, Jeremy Scott.
Hello.
And from Music Video Sins, Barrett Scher.
Hi there.
Today we're going to be doing a mini-pod.
Oh, it's a mini-pod.
Mini-pod.
Of Rogue One, a Star Wars story.
Rogue-pod.
Which, you know, made tons and tons of money over the weekend.
How much money did it make?
I think it was 150 million, Jesus. 155 million, something like that. Let me look it up real quick.
Sorry, I put you on the spot.
155 million over the weekend.
That's pretty good. Something like
that. Yeah, something like the exact amount that I just said.
So we got to go spoiler free for a few minutes, right?
Yeah, we got to go spoiler free for a moment. So one thing off the bat that I really like about this movie is that it feels unencumbered by all the Skywalker bullshit. Mm-hmm. Like, that's something that I found very refreshing about this. Like, it doesn't have anything to do with, you know, family lines, someone becoming a Jedi and being evil and all that.
Yeah,
other
whose kid is who, and
right,
speculation.
And all this other type of bullshit. So immediately, right off the bat, I enjoyed this because it's, I like this ever since Force Awakens came out, this sort of different kind of look into maybe even behind the scenes of what's going on in Star Wars. It's a different feel to mm-hmm. everything. Even Force Awakens, even though it's episode 7, is so distant as far as like how they decided to tell that story, even though that story is very similar to a lot of those. But that's the one thing that immediately came out at me about this. But anyway, what are you about you guys?
I mean, overall, I had a really good time with it. I was surprised how many times I found myself smiling or chuckling along the way. I have a couple of story gripes and a couple of technical gripes, but I would put this at probably a solid B+.
Mm-hmm.
I would recommend it to somebody looking for a good time who enjoys Star Wars movies, but you know, I don't think we're ever going to get one that's perfect. So
once again, we have Alan Tudyk playing the best part of this movie, which is a robot.
Yeah, and this time he went full on performance capture too. It's not just a voice.
Oh, okay.
Oh, yeah.
He was doing the Andy Serkis thing for this character. And yeah, you're right. He's the best thing about the movie, hands down, in my opinion.
Yeah, and I don't know what it is about these movies. Like the last two movies, the best thing about them has been the robot.
It's been the new droid.
Yeah.
Well, where does it even encroach on what I'll say is the canon? Everything but the prequels. Like, does it even crack those top four? You know, between New Hope, Empire, Return of the Jedi, and Force Awakens.
I need to see it again. In all honesty, the further I get from it, the less I think I liked it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think I really liked it coming out. And right now, I would just say I liked it.
I agree with you.
So another viewing might actually push it further down. The most common thing I'm seeing online are people starting, like, comparing this to Force Awakens. Is this better than Force Awakens? And I think they're pretty level. I mean, Force Awakens' biggest flaws are how New Hopey it feels.
Mm-hmm.
And this movie's flaws are something we'll get into in the spoiler section. But, you know, they both felt like Star Wars. They both gave me thrills. They both gave me smiles and laughs. And, you know, I liked them both.
This one has a lot fewer laughy moments, though.
You know, what's funny is halfway through the movie, when we're first meeting Donnie Yen's character, and he cracks a couple of jokes that are really funny. Yeah. I was like, man, this is a funny Star Wars movie. And then there was like no laughs after that at all. And I walked out going, that wasn't as funny as that. Like, one of my main notes was going to be, this is a funny movie, but only up to a certain point did I feel that way.
Yeah. And I'm also wondering where they did the reshoots too. I don't know. I haven't read anything about it, but didn't really feel like there was anything they just kind of tacked on.
No, it was the anti-Suicide Squad.
Yeah, there was one scene in there, and I can't remember what it was, that felt like, okay, yeah, you could have, it's very possible that you guys came in and reshot that, but it nothing, yeah, like it wasn't like Suicide Squad, where you're like, okay, geez,
yeah,
I see that you had to add stuff there, I guess. Yeah,
exactly. I mean, but without talking spoilers, I think with one or two exceptions that stand out to me, I think the cast is all really good. Really well cast in their roles and winning in their performances. I particularly liked, like you said, Alan Tudyk, Donnie Yen, and his buddy with the big gun. Mm-hmm. And I liked Riz Ahmed.
Yeah, who was from The Night Before.
Yeah, The Night Of. The Night
That's
Before.
Right, The Night Of. I think I've done that twice.
He might have been in The Night Before, hey. We just didn't see him.
Yeah, The Night Of.
You know, the main character, Jin, she's not bad in this movie, but I felt like that was one of the casting or performances that like stood out the least to me. Mm-hmm. I feel like any old actress could have done that role the way she did it, and she's asked to carry the film emotionally at a couple of points that end up ultimately ringing a little hollow to me. Mm-hmm. But in general, I think everyone's well cast. This movie is brisk. It's almost too brisk for the first hour because there's a lot of Guardians of the Galaxy style planet hopping going on.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's certainly not slow or draggy anywhere along the
line.
That's
the thing. I love all these characters, and I wish that they had spent a little bit more time on them. And like you're talking about characters that are really, really cool, and they have a good dynamic and everything. Now, the story thrusts them together. They're not all together at one time, like just because they're friends or whatever. But like the story sort of thrusts them together. But by the end of the movie, I was like, man, it would have been nice to have seen these guys interacting a lot more and maybe cut out some other like backstory we didn't really need.
Yeah.
I don't think it gets into too much spoiler territory to say at the very beginning they're showing the, you know, Felicity Jones character as a kid and her parents and all this other stuff, stuff that we could have easily just had them say, you know, happened in the past, and we didn't need, like, I don't think we needed all that.
I thought the exact same thing.
That's the stuff just before the title. Well, it's right after the Galaxy Far, Far Away, and then there's that section, and then they cut to Star Wars. And then it's like, that's a part that we didn't need, really. If you had spent a little bit more time with these other people, I would have been... Because this could have been really, like, fun as far as, like, all these people doing their thing and everything, but we don't get to spend much time with them before they start getting into fights and stuff.
Yeah, and she was... I hear what you're saying, because she was a little bit forced drama, you know? Like, it didn't necessarily drag for me in those first few scenes, but it was definitely a little bit unnecessary. And, like, I have lived in Donnie Yen's character for like another 20 minutes, you know.
Oh, really, my goodness. And his relationship with the other guy that has the big gun, because they've been together for a long time. They have a lot of silent understandings. And that's where a lot of the humor came from. Yep. That's where most of the best action came from, was that first scene with Donnie Yen on Jeddah, uh-huh. Which I want to talk about specifically when we get into spoilers, is amazing.
Yeah.
So... Yeah, I agree. And honestly, I think they were just trying to flesh out Mads Mikkelsen's character. And so that's why we get that early scene. And you're right. It felt almost tacked on right at the beginning. In fact, the first time we see her grown up, I thought to myself, we could have just started this movie right here.
Mm-hmm.
But small gripe.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. So I guess to round out the non-spoiler thing is, I think we all liked it with some reservations.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
It's beautiful.
Yeah.
It is a beautiful movie. And what's before, right, as a good transition into spoilers, the reality aspects of this, like the way the ships look and everything, throws in sharp contrast when they do something that's not real.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. I agree completely.
Yeah. So, I think we all liked it. I mean, again, we are again going back to this story about the Death Star. I mean, this movie is again about the Death Star.
Well, and
which
I was
means
surprised.
We now have four movies about the Death Star.
Yep. Yeah, and going in, I thought, okay, this is the movie where they're stealing the plans to the Death Star. I did not expect the Death Star to have so many scenes.
Yeah, mm-hmm. No kidding.
And, you know, my memory of A New Hope was that the Alderaan firing was kind of a test fire.
Mm-hmm.
But this movie gives us like three other test fires that this Death Star did. So you're right.
I'm about, okay, so now we're going to get into spoilers. Yeah, and you were hit touching on the fucking thing about this movie that pisses me off the most.
All right, let's hear it.
And that's basically his Kaiser Sose.
Luke's what? Father is actually Darth Vader. She's the sister and the daughter.
They just No. I'm reading the books.
This bullshit test fire bullshit. Yeah. That is the biggest bullshit in this movie.
Yes,
in the first movie, they were like, oh, we need to show the demonstrate the power of this station.
Right.
And they go to Alderaan and they blow the fucking shit up.
Yep.
In this one, it's like a nuclear blast.
Yeah.
It's all it is. It can destroy a city.
Well, yeah. And that's it. At least that's all it does.
Yeah.
Like, I think they mentioned at some point it could destroy the whole planet.
Exactly. Yeah. They wanted to dial it back, like setting your phaser to stun, basically. They're like, we don't want a manifesto. We want a story.
Well, and it's
like
this
that.
Is getting into my biggest gripe in the movie, which is Grand Moff Tarkin and Princess Leia being all CGI
mm-hmm.
Final Fantasy movie bullshit.
Yeah.
But it was Tarkin that did that. He dialed it back to the city so that... Because he said we could still show its power, but what he was really trying to do was usurp the glory.
Mm-hmm.
And he didn't want the planet blowing up to happen on the other dude's watch, I think.
Yeah, apparently they have different drives or something like that that you can set to city destroy or country destroy or planet destroy.
I think it's some bullshit. Yeah. They may very well be a reason for it that I missed while I watched it. But I was just like, I obviously did miss it because I was sitting there going, wait a minute, what is this doing? All it's doing is blowing up one city. What's going on? And I think it's just something in there so that they obviously, because the first one that gets blown up is Alderaan, mm-hmm. they can't blow up any other planets because that's stupid.
Yeah.
But what they do now is say, oh, well, we tested it out many other times before on a smaller setting.
Yeah. Exactly.
You know, for this movie.
Yeah.
You know,
it's like a rich guy having a Lamborghini
mm-hmm.
and like really wanting to show it off. And like, you don't want to drive it around like a neighborhood. You want to like take it on the Autobahn or something mm-hmm. like that. It's like every chance they have to blow some shit up at this thing, they're going to take it out of this movie.
And it drives. Okay. The I don't know the actor's name, the guy from Dark Knight Rises. I felt like he was playing the same character,
mm-hmm.
a guy who thinks he's in charge, but somebody else actually is. And this guy's just a fuck up.
And at first I thought he was playing Grand Moff Tarkin.
Yeah.
And it was just a different actor.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, that makes perfect sense to me.
Why didn't they do that?
Does. And then actual Grand Moff Tarkin shows up, and it is definitely CGI Peter Cushing.
Yes.
They got two actors to play him and Leia, but then like digitized them to look like what they did
poorly.
In 1970s. Yes, poorly. There's always something missing. And I can't explain what it is. They look exactly like they did in 1977. But there is just something off about it that just doesn't make, you know, doesn't register.
My gripe is with the decision to even try that in the first place.
Why
you've
did
already
they do it?
Recast Mon Mothma. You've recast, you can recast, God, even, I hate what I'm about to say, even Darth Vader sounds wrong in this movie.
Yes.
Because James Earl Jones is 35 years older.
Yes.
And you could probably have gotten an imitator off YouTube who would have sounded exactly like the original.
It sounds like somebody imitating Darth Vader.
It does. And it kind of pulls you out.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, another one of my big gripes with this movie is Darth Vader, because there's no reason for him to be here. And they give him this admittedly badass hallway kill scene to justify his existence in the greater movie as a whole, which is completely unnecessary.
Mm.
And it's symptomatic of what I call this movie's last third is very try-hardy. We're gonna give you Darth Vader. We're going to connect it as closely as possible to New Hope. We're going to use the word hope 1,462 times.
Yep.
We're going to have two separate big rah-rah speeches from the lead actress who's not actually rah-rahing anybody.
Yeah.
And then, okay, we're in the spoiler section. Everybody dies.
Yep. Everybody dies.
Everybody dies.
Mm-hmm.
You could have killed all but one or two. It doesn't have to be Jin. Doesn't have to be. But you were clearly going for, oh, we got permission? Well, let's just fucking kill them all.
Yeah, and they had the Deep Impact ending, too.
I was just going to say, I wonder if this movie knows how Deep Impact it is, because it was like Tay Leone on the beach there.
Yeah, it certainly was.
And there's two scenes like that, because Forrest Whitaker, who I did not understand one lick of dialogue from this entire movie, has a same death, watching this wave of destruction come towards him.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Our bodies come in different shapes and sizes, so doesn't it make sense that our weight loss plans should too? That's the beauty of Noom. They build a personal plan that factors in dietary restrictions, medical issues, and other personal needs so your plan works for you. Noom doesn't restrict or shame when you want to treat yourself. Their flexible program focuses on progress instead of perfection. You don't have to give up carbs or anything. And with their daily lessons, you can learn something new about your food choices every day. After just a few days of using the app, I learned how to recognize cues for overeating and how to choose the right foods to feel full. Stay focused on what's important to you with Noom's psychology and biology-based approach. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's Noom.com. And check out Noom's first ever cookbook, The Noom Kitchen, for 100 healthy and delicious recipes to promote better living. Available to buy now wherever books are sold.
That's another thing. Forrest Whitaker in this, it feels like, and I could be wrong, but it feels like a lot of these characters, they just intentionally didn't do things with so that they can make the movie later.
Yeah.
I'm cynical enough to think that because the Forrest Whitaker character is supposed to be a badass.
Yeah. Yeah.
And we see him one time when, you know, the Felicity Jones, I'm going to say Jen Erso character is down in her like hidey hole at the beginning.
Yeah.
And then we see him again when she goes over to see him. The only reason they go to see him, by the way, is because he has this hologram message. Right. That's the only reason.
Which nobody sees except for
exactly.
Except for Jen.
Yeah. Convenient for the story. But like, I felt like this guy was way more than, I mean, the movie's building him up as way more than what they actually show in the movie. And after they shows the hologram, well, you're done. You don't have any reason to be on this movie, in this movie anymore.
There's a succession of deaths in here that reaches a tipping point right at the K2's death.
Isn't it kind of like The Departed, where like
this movie's gonna
like fucking... The Departed? Just like I remember watching The Departed with some people, and there was actual laughter at how many people are dying, you know, and everything.
Especially in that latter part, after the last part of the movie,
because it's just like it just never ends. But it's kind of like that. It's kind of like, you know, it's like, well, these characters didn't do shit after this, so they all died.
Yeah, and I feel like I've even seen some people justify, like our buddy Aaron Dicer, he and I were emailing about it, and he felt like it was appropriate to kill them all because, you know, in Star Wars, we don't know about any of them. I think that is a very thin, weak line of logic because these guys could have gone on to have anonymous lives that weren't in the first three movies.
That's correct.
And what's sad is that you gave us a couple of really great characters. Like Donnie Yen's character is awesome. Mm-hmm. I don't know if he used to be a Jedi or he kind of is. He's blind. He's a wizard with that stick. I was expecting bullshit when he goes to fight those stormtroopers. Mm-hmm. But the way they executed his fighting style made sense to me. And especially when he fucking holds that stormtrooper up in front of him like a shield for like five goddamn seconds, deflecting bullets with that. That's the most thrilling part of the movie for me.
Donnie Yen, man. I had watched that Eat Man clip that you had sent, but I hadn't seen really anything else that he had done. And I wasn't ready. They should have sent a poet. Like I was not ready for how fucking badass this guy is. It's
that
amazing.
That was the one moment in the theater that I actually heard applause during the middle of it. Like it was that that awesome.
Yeah,
you know?
I want to see that scene again right now.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Or the scene where he literally, when he takes down the TIE fighter and it smashes in, when the rainstorm and it smashes into the gun turret, he looks away from it. It's a no look shot.
Wait, he's blind anyway.
I know, but he intentionally looks the other way. And it's fucking badass.
Yes, but also one of the funniest parts of the movie was when he's like, they put a bag over everybody's head and then they put it over his head and he's like, seriously, I'm blind. There are a lot of little touches that I liked. There's that moment early on where you're seeing a ship, and then as the light moves, you realize it's in front of a huge Star Destroyer.
Yeah.
And then it cuts back and the light keeps moving, and now the Star Destroyer is dwarfed by the Death Star. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That gave me a solid chuckle when I saw that. Yeah, I thought that was a neat little trickaroo.
The ending of this, which you alluded to, the Darth Vader killing all the guys and everything, at first I thought this was the opening of A New Hope, basically, from his perspective.
Right, and that would have been awesome.
And it's not.
No.
Because he is offing fools at a record pace, and like, even though, I mean, like, everything, there's a lot of details in that last scene that feel very much like that first scene in A New Hope. But it takes, you know, you see the Leia's ship fly off after she's like, hope, and all that, fly
and
off. Well,
and
you
realize Vader just waits.
And I guess Vader, like, goes in that same ship later.
And eventually catches up to
and
her.
And catches up and whatever, I guess. It does. It feels like some details are a little off on that. I could be wrong, but it feels like they didn't get that right.
Yeah, because R2 wasn't on that ship, or at least they didn't show it. They showed him in the hangar.
Yeah, there's a little scene with R2 and C-3PO, the obligatory scene, because they have to, you know, give the fanboys what they want.
Fucking the Stan Lee of Star Wars, C-3PO and R2-D2.
But they're like standing off in some hangar or whatever. Yeah. But then I guess apparently they get on that ship. Mm. I was a little confused though. Because once they send the plans, I thought Jyn Erso said, I've sent this to the entire universe, is what she said. Didn't she say that?
Yes, she does. And that is one thing that I want to talk about.
Right.
Because that is the most premature celebration moment I have ever fucking seen.
Yeah, she didn't need to say that.
She didn't need to say that, and she hadn't done it yet.
You're right.
She hadn't uploaded all that stuff yet. He was standing right in front of her.
But she knew the Ex Machina Diego Luna guy was going to come back from his broken back and save her.
Right.
So. I mean, he's going to exposit for a while, and he's going to like hold the gun on her like, I win.
Well, and I also was confused there because he says, who are you? And I was like, were you not on the platform when she yelled father right before her dad died?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Like, what the heck?
Yeah.
But was she just talking out of her ass when she said she sent this to the entire universe? Or was she expecting it to get sent to the entire universe once she sent? Because that completely undermines New Hope. Because there's only one set of plans, and they send it on R2-D2.
Yeah.
And it's all based on R2-D2 getting it to Obi-Wan.
Yeah.
That's the only reason it works. But if it's going to the entire universe, then R2-D2, it doesn't even matter.
She doesn't have a strong understanding of how technology
works. I guess
not.
Well, she's just a petty thief. You got to cut her some slack.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Well, and there's two things competing with time in that last thing. There is a shield of, they're preventing them from communicating with each other, and they have to blow up that shield. Mm-hmm. And there's these transmissions going on, and it's like, sometimes they would talk about one or the other, and I didn't know which one they were talking about.
I didn't always know which of the about-to-be-dead heroes were trying to accomplish which mission.
Yeah.
But I did, just from a sci-fi standpoint, I did think that planet shield with the square, that circular opening in one place was kind of freaking cool.
Yeah.
And I loved watching the fleets come out of warp, or what do they call it in Star Wars? I just used to Star
hyperdrive.
Trek come out of hyperdrive, and especially Vader's Star Destroyer comes out of hyperdrive. It just blows up a ship that was headed that direction.
It has to happen a lot, right?
You would think. So many little dazzling touches like that.
Once again, we had hyperdrive just being done out of nowhere, like Force Awakens did, and I feel like this is this is one of those heresy moments in the new Star Wars, because the very first one, Han Solo makes it very clear. And he's like, He's like, hey, you don't want to just go on and go into hyperspace. You can run into a star or a planet or something like that. And you're like, yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
That makes a lot of sense. Now, two movies in a row, people are like, ah, fuck the coordinates. We're just going to go into hyperspace.
And one guy was on the planet's surface when he went into hyperdrive.
Yeah.
And,
just,
barely, that's
and
okay.
It looked cool, but I was like, I don't know about that.
Yeah, it's like, well, it's desperate times. It's a call for desperate measures and whatnot. Like, no, it doesn't, really. You've been flying around avoiding all this shit without hyperspace this whole time. Why don't you wait for some coordinates?
Well, one thing I did like was the setting of that final battle on that planet. Like, they've set battles in ice planets, in forests, and in deserts and everything. What they haven't done is, like, some crazy, like, tropical setting.
Yeah.
And it was gorgeous.
It was cool looking. I mean, I was getting mad Return of the Jedi vibes from two things. The way the walkers were behaving, and then just those squarish-looking bunker garage doors where the troopers were all running out of very much reminded me of those Endor bunkers that Han Solo was outside of.
Yep.
But I agree. Setting wise, I was really glad. Even Jeddah, the planet, while kind of a desert planet, does not remind me of Tatooine.
Yeah.
And I love the ambush scene in that on that planet where everybody kind of gets involved in the action, whether they intend to or not. I think that's right before they meet Donnie Yen.
Mm-hmm.
But no, I agree. I thought the setting of that final battle was pretty cool.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, we like to complain about a lot of stupid shit. None of that is really like something that's going to make you go, I hate this movie or whatever. But,
oh, no.
But I ultimately, though, I mean, what I get take out of this is that, you know, K2SO is a great creation. Of course, he's dead by the end of it. They could always remake him, though. That's kind of weird thing for me, though, is that he's apparently an Imperial robot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And there are a million of them, and this is the first time we're ever hearing of them.
Well, the funny thing about that, when they assume the identities of the Empire and everything, by again luring the people on the ship and, you know, beating them up and everything, or killing them. But it's funny that Jen Erso is probably like 4'10", 5 feet, and she somehow like gets this to fit, and she's walking around with these guys, and she's like a midget walking with them, but she's this Death Star pilot.
Right.
It's crazy.
Anything else that we need to talk about on this movie?
I want to talk about the score, because I'm conflicted here. Now, Giacchino only came on this movie like 4 weeks ago. Mm-hmm. Like, he basically had 4 weeks to do the score.
Mm.
He was replacing another guy that I think got called away to another. I don't think it was Bad Blood or anything. And there are honest to God moments in here where I was like, wow, I really like what he did right there. And then there are moments in this movie where I'm like, so he's just inverting the original score and that's all he's going to do. And granted, he had some time constraints or what have you, but I'm like really 50-50 on the score. There were parts of it that I thought were borderline perfect, and then parts that just felt rushed and sloppy.
Did they completely shit can this other guy's music?
Yeah.
Because Giacchino's the only person credited, and even the IMDb doesn't even have an uncredited on this. Mm-hmm. So that's very strange. It must have been terrible.
It was either a terrible score or was just bad enough they didn't think they could turn it around.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this score is fine. Like, it hits the right horn notes as we transition. It's going to get you in the right mindset. But, you know, I almost just wish they'd have hired him in the beginning, given him the same time he had on Star Trek.
Oh, yeah.
And we might have gotten just something killer iconic.
Yeah, because he puts that perfect twist on the Star Trek theme. And what you hear here is like, da 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 da. It's like a weird, okay, let's change it so that we don't get copyright
violations. It's like what The Simpsons did with the Cheers theme song.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, well, it feels like it.
It's sort of what exactly. That's exactly the right way to feel about it, because it was like Star Wars The Clone Wars, which I recently saw. The music on that is like as if somebody is making a sound-alike sound of it, and like making sure some notes are not exactly the same, or else they're going to get copyright violations.
Which is weird, because when Vader comes on, they do the Vader Death March scene.
Although it's slow.
Yeah.
First time we see him, which again, I think this might have been the reshoot, is when Mendelsohn goes to see Vader, and Vader's in the tank. That's what I was trying to think of.
Yeah,
and then Vader comes out and makes a pun about choking on your aspirations, hardy har. Mm-hmm. Vader's always been a wiseacre.
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
And then, you know, leaves. But when Vader's walking in after that thing, I noticed it was like halftime. the typical Imperial march. But yeah, the melody was identical.
Yeah, yeah.
Anyway, I was conflicted. I thought there were good and bad parts of the score, and I really love his work, and so I hate whenever I have to say not great things.
No,
about
I totally agree, and it has to be the time constraint.
Yeah,
four fucking weeks.
Yeah,
are you kidding?
Seriously. And honestly, I think history will probably look back and consider, you know, considering how much time he had, this is actually genius.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah.
The another interesting thing is the screenplay is written by Chris Weitz and Tony Gilroy.
Wow, the guy from American Pie?
Chris Weitz of American Pie fame and many, many other movies.
I'm sorry to pigeonhole you in there, Chris Weitz.
I mean, of course, he also, I believe he was one of the directors of the Twilights, one of the Twilights. I mean, he's got like a very, like, eclectic career. Like, see, his writing credits are like About a Boy and Ants and stuff like that, and his directing credits. Yeah, he did Twilight Saga, New Moon. He did Golden Compass. He did About a Boy, Down to Earth, stuff like that. And then Tony Gilroy, who Bourne movies and Michael Clayton is basically what he's known for and everything. Those guys teamed up on a Star Wars movie.
That's crazy.
I would love to know the story behind that.
Yeah.
I want to know the studio or the director or the producer says, you know what? I know one guy who could do this. Chris Weitz? Yes. And then the other guy's like, and the guy's like, let's team him up with Tony Gilroy. Put some Bourne in this shit. Like, I'll never understand how this type of stuff works. You know?
It's the last two guys at the bar one night.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. but yeah, ultimately, I think it was a fun screenplay.
It definitely was. I mean, there was a lot of action. You never felt like it was bogged down, or I never felt like it was bogged down.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I mean, Gareth Edwards did a nice job. Mm-hmm. I mean, overall, but was there anything? I didn't see monsters, but like, was there anything that really like specifically qualified him to do this movie? Do you think?
I believe it was. This is just my opinion, but the way he handled the massive scale in Godzilla, and then like one or two shots, like that red smoke paratrooper shot in Godzilla is just fucking amazing.
Yeah.
And I think it was that kind of visual flair combined with he's handled this huge scale destruction type stuff.
You know, I don't doubt that one bit, but a lot of these directors that are getting on these movies, like Rian Johnson, who we both like a lot, has never done a movie like this, and he's going to be episode 8.
Yep.
Colin Trevorrow, who, you know, did, you know, Safety Not Guaranteed, Guaranteed is given the Jurassic World movie.
Yeah.
I do agree that he probably got it based on that, but I don't know what these other guys are getting it based on, if that's the case. But yeah, I mean, I felt like Godzilla was a decent Godzilla. Mm. He had a lot of really cool things in it, but, I don't think he didn't really get in the way of this movie. He didn't really, I don't think he elevated it in any particular way either. Except maybe that it's just that it's gorgeous and that he keeps it trim and everything. So.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of, like you said, there's a lot of cool little moments.
Like when she gets blown off, almost off the platform by the ship's engines taking off.
Yeah.
I was like, I've never seen this kind of shit in a Star Wars movie.
Yeah, exactly. What we have seen, and it reminded me of that Oscar Isaac scene in Force Awakens where he takes out all those TIE fighters.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But when the guy with the gun, Wen Jiang is the guy with the huge gun.
Yeah.
He hits one of the big walkers like upside the head and it turns around. And then all of a sudden this Blue Squadron pilot just blows it out.
Yeah.
That was fucking awesome.
Yeah,
and
it
then it cuts to the squadron leader. He just has this little smile like, yeah, shit.
Yeah.
That just happened.
Well, and they took footage that was unused from A New Hope. Of like the red and gold leader,
and
enhanced it and used it in this sequence because it would make sense that they would be a part of this battle as well. Uh-huh. And I couldn't tell watching the movie that that's what had happened. I wasn't positive until I got home. So that's where you should draw the line, right there.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
You did not have footage of Cushing to, you know, nice it up.
Yeah.
You had to create from scratch, basically, and then use audio recordings. And honestly, one thing I thought to myself in that first scene, I didn't know they were going to go back to Tarkin like three more times. But when that first scene was done, I was like, you should have just kept it on his reflection, looking out that window, because that looked real enough.
Yeah.
You didn't have to spin him around and zoom in on his face and have it be fakey looking.
I'm wondering, is it the eyes? Is it the eyes that really give it away?
I don't know what it is.
I think it might be.
It's very good. It just, you're right. There's
something
there.
I think it might
there.
Be. The eyes might be a little bit too shiny or something about it that they can't write quite. Because, yeah, I mean, when I saw it, I was like, yeah, something's just not registering right. Mm. And it could be just because I remember the, you know, what he looked like in the 1977 version. We're talking about a movie that's got, you know, has gotten worn out after watching it on VHS many times, and you never really got to see it. And well, you get to see it later when they make the special editions, but there's something about it, man. There's something I can't quite put my finger on.
Well, even with Leia, you could have still played that scene mostly the same by having the door open and seeing her from behind, and that's it.
Yep. Yeah.
But no, you had to turn her around and try to outdo the Twilight baby just so she would say the word hope.
And someone audibly laughed. I remember when they saw, when we saw Leia show, I heard this guy go, like, you know, it just does, it takes you out of it.
It does. And that should not be the goal.
No.
Yeah. The goal should be to keep you in it.
It's unnecessary.
I agree. And I love, I mean, again, that Darth Vader hallway scene. Fucking awesome.
Yeah, yes.
You have never seen Darth Vader like this in your life.
No.
But he's a completely unnecessary character. Mm-hmm. And so because of that, I can't feel 100% right about that scene.
Yeah.
Anyway, I've said everything I need to say. All my notes have been checked off. My heart is clear. I enjoyed the movie. I think you will too.
Yeah. There's plenty of good in here. There's a lot of stuff that's going to leave you wanting, though. And it might be just the way this story is. It can't be 3 hours long. And it, you know, some things are going to just leave you wanting in the end. There's not anything to go around it. But yeah, ultimately, yeah, good time at the movies.
Oh, absolutely.
I would give it the same, like B minus, B plus.
Somewhere around in there.
So it's a good idea.
I agree.
All right. Well, that will be this mini pod for Rogue One. This is Chris Atkins and Jeremy Scott and Barrett Sher. We'll see you next time.
Thanks for listening. Comment on our episodes on our SoundCloud page. Check us out on YouTube, Twitter, Facebook, and Reddit. And be sure to visit CinemaSins.com.
He knows that. I'm trying to grab him at this point.
I want to tell you guys this story. So a couple rows down from me, a dude literally before the previews start, maybe after the first preview, this dude looks over to this family that's next to him and he says, "You put that phone away. I'm going to shove it up your fucking ass."
Oh, my God.
And they just looked over and we were just in shock. And, you know, he was all self-righteous and like, "Yeah, I did something right there." You know, he settled back into the seat. I've never seen anything like that before.
Yeah.
And, you know, I was a little bit like,
it's over the top
concerned, and they didn't like get up and move or anything like that. They just sat there through the whole fucking movie. And I kept, that kind of took me out of the movie.
I can imagine.
And the guy in front of me with his family, with another young kid, said something like, put his hand on his shoulder. First of all, I would not have touched this dude after he said that. Put his hand on his shoulder and said something to him. And he just kind of turned around in a huff and he didn't say anything from that point forward. But I was like, God. That's like the most just visceral, violent thing that I've ever seen in a movie.
Yeah, usually people are a little bit too timid to say anything. And in this case, it's really wrong because it's the trailers and who gives a shit.
Yeah.
Now, a lot of times, if you pull it out during the trailers, then you're likely to pull it out during the movie, too. I can understand that. But during the trailers, who gives a shit? Yeah. But usually it's people who are too timid. That was just way too over the top.
Yeah, man.
Like, at least go over and say, man, you know, could you just turn that off, please?
Yeah.
And then pull out the, I'll stick it up your ass later if he doesn't do it.
Yeah.
I was driving past a woman on my way down here tonight who had her phone up in front of her face, one hand on the wheel, one hand on the phone. And if she had her windows down, I would have yelled something similar to her. Because you're taking my life into your hands.
Well, yeah, exactly. That's a different situation there completely.
Oh, my God.
But, yeah, I don't think I've ever F-bombed right out of the gate somebody that was making too much noise or being too loud. Hell,
yeah.
I got beer spilled on me at a Bare Naked Ladies concert by the drunk guy above me, and I didn't cuss him at all. I just turned around and was like, dude, he was like, oh, sorry. You know how drunk people are. And so I just watched the rest of the show with beer all over my clothes.
By the way, this was on Twitter. Did we say something about CGI Leia in the early in an
we
earlier?
We did. Went back and listened to it. It's Barrett. It took me forever to find it. It's not quite the same context, but yeah, because we're talking about Yoda doing CGI flipping around.
Yeah.
And then we were talking about Leia not wielding the Force in Force Awakens. Mm-hmm. And Barrett says something like, or maybe they'll have a CGI Leia flipping around like Yoda did or something like that.
Oh, shit. I forgot that I said that.
And so we did say CGI Leia, but not in the same.
Okay.
We didn't like call it the way the guy said. But
I feel like I called it.
And that was like a year ago.
Yeah. That was our first episode.
Episode 2,
yeah. Yeah. So it was almost 1 year ago today that we recorded all that stuff.
Awesome.
And we were talking about Star Wars.
Yes, we were.
And you know what? It's going to be an annual thing because they're going to put one out every year.
Yep. Yeah.